Hello and welcome to the Grove Church Podcast. I'm Charlie Lofton, the lead pastor there, and we are so glad that you're joining us. Whether you are a member and you're just catching up on a sermon that you missed, or you're someone who's brand new, we are really glad that you are joining us. And if you are new in some way, and I know that a lot of people will do that, will listen to sermons first before they visit, I want you to know that we would love to meet you at any point. You can join us live in our services on Sunday 9 and 10:30 or our streaming service at 10:30. Either way, we would love to be able to get to know you. And regardless of why you are here listening to this sermon today, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Hey, if you are new, I am Charlie, lead pastor here. Really glad all of you are worshiping with us today. And Easter is next Sunday. I always get a little weird, disoriented when it's this close to spring break. Like, we just finished spring break. How can it already be Easter? But it is next Sunday. And look forward to celebrating with all of you. Hope you'll be back here next Sunday. And just kind of want to put this in your mind again, that this is a time when people more than any other time of year are open to spirituality, to hearing about God, to coming to church. If there's anybody in your life that is disconnected from church, disconnected from God, families, friends, whatever, please use this as an opportunity to invite them. This is the highest percentages of yeses that you'll ever get when you're inviting someone, and we would just love to be able to share Jesus and love on your friends and family. So please be thinking about that this week, and more details about what we're doing, the details of Easter. Scott will talk about that at the end of the service. But right now, we are in the nearing the end of a series. It's going to lead us to next Sunday. We're kind of asking and answering big questions. We've talked about, can we trust the Bible? We've talked about, is there really a God out there that you can know? Last week, we talked about the problem of evil. Why is there so much evil in the world if God is so good and God is powerful? We've had some really good discussions. And today, next week, obviously, we're going to talk about, did Jesus really rise from the dead? But today, we're kind of asking and answering this question about, is Jesus the only way to God? And when I was growing up, I grew up in a small southern town in southern Arkansas, and everybody I knew, or everybody really interacted with there, you were either a Christian and you went to church, or you were choosing to not do that. So there were Christians and non-Christians in the sense that there were people that went to church and were Christians, and people who were choosing not to be. There had to have been. I don't know. This is the 70s and 80s in El Dorado, Arkansas. I don't know. There were people following other religions there. If there were, there were not very many. You didn't really interact with them. And so in growing up, it was just there weren't a lot of choices. There was one choice, and did you choose Jesus or not? And as a lot of people who grow up in small towns or in very small communities, you go to college, you just have a completely different experience. And you're interacting with a wide variety of different sorts of people than you've ever interacted with before, with professors and with ideas that you've never interacted with before. And suddenly this question about who Jesus is, about do you find God through Jesus? Are there multiple different paths that can kind of lead you to Jesus? This metaphor got used a lot, that God is like at the top of a mountain and there are a lot of different paths that you can get there to find God, and Jesus is one of those paths. And interacting on this question with a lot of different people from other religions, people who have no religion, people who just kind of have their own spirituality, and again, these different professors. And I mentioned this a few weeks ago, if you were here, I had an interesting relationship with a lot of the religion professors at our school. I was kind of a loud guy. I was very bold. I was very enthusiastic in my mind to represent what I believe was Jesus and Christian ideals. And sometimes it would be antagonistic. I'm not necessarily looking back very proud at some of the antagonistic things. But I ultimately built, I would say, with a handful of these religion professors over the years in college, and then after, as we worked with this college ministry that was at our same school, built, I would say, some friendships with some of these religion professors. And this was one of the things that we spent a lot of time talking about. Is there one way to God through Jesus, or are there a lot of different paths where you can find God? It was a very common thing to talk about. And after I graduated, again, I was on staff with this college ministry, one of the professors would invite me in from time to time to guest lecture in his class as we were discussing this topic. So I would do this, and sometimes there would be a book. One time he let me pick a book that would be part of the curriculum that they could read, and then I would kind of lead a discussion on that. And very often the conversation that we would have that he would ask me to come speak about is what we're talking about today. And one time during one of the semesters when he had me up there, I was up there speaking, and a friend of his was in town. And the friend of his referred to himself as a Catholic priest, and the things that he was saying, I've never heard any Catholic say before. So, I mean, it would be weird to say that this guy represented Catholicism, because what he was saying didn't represent any Catholicism I've ever had any contact with. But that's how he described himself anyways. And so I gave up and gave my presentation about Jesus and why I believe that he is the only true way that we can find and have life with God. And this guy gives up and gives his. And he's talking for a while. And I'm like, I don't know what this guy's going to say. I had an idea about what Catholic was. And then he starts talking, you know, the main thing about God is love. And I'm like, okay, I think I know where this is going. But so far, I can't disagree with that. God is love. And he's talking about love. And God wants us to love. And this is the main thing that he's calling us to, is to love. And he's going through all of this. I'm like, okay. And then he goes, you know, if you really want to find God, you just need to love. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so ultimately, anybody who loves will ultimately be able to find God in this life and the next. And then some of you may be thinking about this, but what about like a baby or someone who dies before they have any real capacity for love? And I want to say this too. If you have loved or ever been loved, then you will be able to go to heaven and find God. And that sounded real sweet, but I was kind of a combative 23-year-old at the time, and I'm kind of side-eyeing this guy a little bit, and I'm like, and there's a thing on the internet now. If you've ever heard of this is pre-internet. I'm that old. There's a thing called Godwin's Law. If you bring Hitler into a debate, you've already lost the debate, right? If somebody says something, well, that's what Hitler would say. You've lost the point you bring up Hitler. But I'm sitting here right now in this moment going, I'm thinking about Hitler. And I looked at him and I was like, now Hitler had a mama and I think a girlfriend. And in my mind, this was going to change his thoughts. And he goes, well, I've just never thought of it. Yeah, so I guess, yeah, Hitler would be in heaven then. And in my brain, I just kind of was like, I don't know if this was a debate or not. I just kind of was just like, looking at the crowd, looking at the class, I was like, I won this, right? I mean, it was wild. You could just tell that this guy's heart, you know, it's like, this is a big deal. It's a big deal. The class is feeling it. It's why I talked about it so many different times. It's like, there's this deep question in all of us. And I really believe that this question has been placed in us. I think it is a design feature of who we are, that God has placed in us this desire to ask this question. I'm here. God is there. There's this distance, be it spiritual or physical or whatever. And how do I get from here? And how do I do this? I want to know God. I want to be with God. I want to be connected with him. How do I get there? Do I just get to choose? Is there a particular way? We ask this question. And in John chapter 14, we get someone is asking this question. Because Jesus is talking to his disciples, and he's trying to get them to kind of settle down a little bit, because he's preparing them for he's about to die. And he's telling them about the Father, and he's telling them about what's about to happen to him. And he's like, listen, you need to understand that my Father has a huge house, and it's got a lot of rooms. And I'm going there to prepare a place for you so that you can be with the Father. I'm going to prepare a place for you, but don't worry, I'm coming back. So he's talking about that he's going to go to the Father, to where this mansion is, where there are all these rooms, prepare a place, and then ultimately going to come back. And this guy, Thomas, who is one of the 12 disciples, who gets a really bad rap sometimes because he asks too many questions. But his questions are always really good. And we can call him Doubting Thomas all we want for being the one that, like the other 10 disciples, they got to see Jesus and say, "Hey, look, Jesus is back from the dead," and he didn't get to be there. And it's like, I'd kind of like to see him. And like, why are we giving him a hard time? Why give him a, it's not like the other 10 believed before. They went, they had to see him. Like, I need to see this. Like, makes sense, right? I never heard anybody come back from the dead either, right? I want to see it. And here he's got this question. Jesus is saying this thing, "Hey, listen, I'm about to go and prepare this place for you where the Father is." And nobody knows what he's talking about. And Thomas is the one that has the courage to ask the question. Verse 5, John chapter 14. Thomas said to him, "Lord, we do not know where you're going." This is a great opening line. I'm going to the Father's house. He's got me in a mansion. There's a lot of rooms. I don't know where you're going. What are you even talking about? So we don't know where you're going, so how can we know the way? It's a great question. He's leaving, going somewhere to prepare a place for them somewhere to do something. We don't know what you're going. We don't know what you're talking about. How can we really know the way to the Father, to God? Verse 6, and Jesus answered, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him." Okay. And then Philip's jumping in. Now Thomas opened the door. Philip's got a question. "Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us." And Jesus answered, "Don't you know me, Philip? Even after I have been among you for such a long time, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, 'Show us the Father'? Don't you believe that I am in the Father and that the Father is in me? The words I say to you, I do not speak on my own authority. Rather, it is the Father living in me who is doing his work. Believe me when I say that I am in the Father and the Father is in me. Or at least believe on the evidence of the works themselves." It's a really interesting argument that Jesus is making here to try to explain this to them. Because ultimately, I believe the thing that he is trying to communicate to the disciples here and having this conversation is completely mind-blowing to them. It just breaks through every paradigm that they have, every understanding that they have about the way they believe the world works, the way that God works, the way that life works, the way that heaven works, all these different things. He's talking about going to the Father. "You don't worry about where I'm going. I'm going to the Father and it's going to be great. It's going to be fine." And it's like, we don't know where you're going. We don't know where that is, and we don't know how to get there. If we don't know where you're going, we don't know how to get there. Just show us the way. And his response to that is to say, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And then as he's explaining this, he says, you need to understand something about who I am. Because the Father is in me, and I am in the Father. And so he says this, and that doesn't make any sense. You can say, no, bro, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, 2,000 years later, maybe it makes some sense. That doesn't make any sense. Okay, if you're not going to, so Philip is like, okay, if you're not going to tell us what the way is, can you at least show us the Father? And he's like, dude, you don't understand. You've already seen the Father. You've already seen the Father because you've seen me. Because if you've seen me, you've seen the Father, because the Father is in me and I am in the Father. And so he's actually making a significantly profound theological argument that we will describe this way. The Father is in Jesus and he in the Father. The Father is in Jesus, he's in the Father. So that's the statement that he's making. And we need to understand the depths and the significance of this. It is one thing for him to say, God is in me. God is with me. God is in me. Like I've got his spirit. I've got his power. He is in me. That is something that has been experienced before. The Holy Spirit in the Old Testament would enter into certain people and say that God is in them. That would make someone a great prophet. But he's taking another step forward. It's not just simply that God is in me, but I am also in the Father. A few chapters earlier in John chapter 10, he's talking to some of the religious leaders and saying some of these very same things and concludes by saying this, "The Father and I are one." And when they heard him say that, they had a very natural response for them at their time. They started picking up rocks. They were about to stone him to death for blasphemy because the thing that he was saying was not just something, hey, I am a prophet that has been empowered by God, but God and I, we're the same. We're the same. Again, 2,000 years later of people talking about the Trinity and people talking about Jesus being the Son of God, it's like, okay, yeah, yeah. If I were to say, hey, have you ever heard Jesus is the Son of God? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you know that means that Jesus is fully God? Yeah, yeah, I've heard that. I've heard Christians talk about this. But this idea then was mind-blowing to them. When asked about how to find the path, the way to God, Jesus starts to talk about himself and about the uniqueness of who he is. I am not just some prophet with wise words to say to you. The Father is in me and I am in the Father. If you have seen me, you have seen God. And so how do you find the way? I am the way. You want to see God? You're here already. He's not talking about the normal things that you would expect. If you were to come to someone who was starting a new religion, who was a prophet, who was a guru, a teacher, a religious leader of some time, you would say, show me the path. I want to know the path. I'm here. God's there. I know there's this path. Tell me the path. And the path is, well, here are the things that you need to believe, and here are the things that you need to do, and with that, the things that you need to not do. Do these things, don't do these things, believe these things, and if you walk this path, then you will find God. Every other religion is this way. They have some prophet, some guru, some teacher, some leader who is believed to have a particular unique insight that has been given some unique revelation from God, from some angel, from some moment of personal enlightenment, who then has the ability to communicate to you the things that you should believe and the things that you should do. And if you believe these things and do these things, you will be on this path. When Thomas says, show us the path, Jesus does not describe a path, he describes himself. He doesn't talk about love. Jesus spends a lot of time talking about love. He doesn't talk about morality. He doesn't talk about things to believe about God, things that Jesus talks about all the time in the Gospels. When asked this very specific question, he does not give an answer that they expect, and honestly, 2,000 years later, we still don't expect. Charlie, show us the way to the Father, you might ask, and you would expect me to talk about things that you should believe and things that you need to do. You click on some video, the keys to a path to God. Beliefs and morals, beliefs and morals, beliefs and morals. In some sort of way, that's the way the world works. That's the way every other religion works. The five tenets of Islam, the path to enlightenment, the revelation supposedly that Joseph Smith had that founded Mormonism. These are all paths to enlightenment, new types of moral tenets that if you will just follow this particular path, you will find God. Jesus, show us the way. That's me. I'm the way. And this is very, very different. Because Jesus does describe a path. What's the most important thing you can do? The most greatest commandment? Well, there's two of them. Actually, love God with everything. Love your neighbor as yourself. He's got a lot of great things to say about love, morality, things that we should believe about God, the way that we should treat one another, the way that we should pray. He's got a lot of different things to say. He's got a path, but that path is an after-the-fact path. How do I find God? You find God by me. And once you find God and you have that life, now there's a path. There's not a path that leads you to God. I lead you to God, me. And then the path is now the life you lead because you found God. And it is very important. I'm just going to keep saying this because it's of incredible importance. We are not looking for answers of the best things to do, the right things to believe, in order to find God. Jesus is the way. So the Father is in Jesus and He's in the Father, and only Jesus can show the way to God. Only Jesus can. He knows Him. He's like, I know that guy. I was just there with him. And I have come from there to come back to you to tell you about it. And He is in me and I am in Him. And it's going to take you a hot minute to kind of put this together theologically, that I'm separate from the Father, but we're both fully God and that there's only one God. It's going to take a minute. And then I want to explain to you about the Holy Spirit. You're going to have to incorporate that. That's going to take you probably 300 years to even put together a cohesive theological statement about it. And 2,000 years, people are still going to be weirding out about it. However, understand this. I'm not Moses. I'm not Abraham. I'm not Elijah. I'm not Isaiah. I'm not any of them. I'm not somebody who has been given a message that points you to God. When asked, show us the way, He said, I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. Jesus does not point you to the way. He is the way. He doesn't teach you truth. He is truth. He doesn't give you life. He is life. And that is a next level deep understanding, because if we're going to talk about why Jesus Christ is the only way that we can find God, the only hope we have in this life or the next, there needs to be something particularly unique about Him. Oh man, all religions are basically the same. They're all teaching some of the same things. I mean, yeah, if we're talking about the morality of teaching and some basic belief systems, there's a lot of overlap between all or at least some religions. And if morality and belief system was the path, then yeah, I mean, just take the best of all of them, I guess, and walk this path and hope for the best. But when Jesus was asked this question, again, Jesus gave a lot of different answers to a lot of different questions about morality and how to live. It's not that He didn't care or what God was like or the nature of a relationship with God, what it was like. He had a lot of great answers to those questions. But when asked the question, how do I find God? He says, it's me. Not the things that I say, not the things that I do. Me. I am the way. There's you. There's God. There's a path. That path is, it's me. He refers to Himself also in this same book as a gate. I'm a gate. I'm the gate. I'm the gate. I'm the way. And again, this is completely and totally mind-blowing to them. They'd lived their whole lives believing that if you followed a certain moral code, a moral path, then that is how you found God. And they can tell, they've been around Him for a couple of years now, that He's kind of upending all of that. And it's not just simply following these laws, because that never really worked for anybody before. It didn't ever seem like it was working. Nobody could do it. So show us then. There's got to be some new path. It just completely blew their mind. And honestly, it makes sense to me that it wouldn't be until maybe 10 or so years later in the letters of Paul and John and Peter, that after some reflection about what Jesus is actually saying here is when we get the most clear statements of understanding about what Jesus is saying here. In 1 Timothy 2, 5 and 6, Paul says this, "For there is one God and one mediator between God and mankind, the man, Christ Jesus, who gave Himself as a ransom for all people. This has now been witnessed to at the proper time." So up until this point, we get statements that, at least to the apostles at the time, seemed vague and uncertain. I am the way. I don't understand that. Or even what you'll see in John chapter 3, a very famous passage. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, right? John chapter 3. He's talking to this religious leader, and he's like, you clearly have some insight into how to find God. I'd like to know about it. And he says, unless you're born again, you'll never be able to see God. And if I say that to you, you're like, yeah, born again. He had a very normal reaction to that, which is like, I'm sorry if this is a little vulgar, but this is what he said. He's like, I can't get back in there. It's not possible. And so Jesus is saying all of these things to wrap our minds around that it is not moral code. It is him. It is a renewal thing that happens in you. It is something because of who Jesus is. And then Paul helps us understand this. There is one God and one mediator between God and mankind. One. And we get these images here. Mediator. Ransom. That implies, more than implies, it states there's a conflict. You're thinking about, I want to get to God. I'm here. God's here. There's a gate, and that gate is locked. You need a mediator. There is a conflict that has to be undone. And it says that he is also a ransom. There's something that has to be paid. There is a conflict that is keeping you from being able to get. You need someone to come mediate it. And someone has to pay a price. So I owe God something. This is not the kind of thing that you just settle yourself by good works and good behavior. Only Jesus can show us the way to God because he's the only one who can mediate the conflict. He is the only one who can mediate the conflict. He's the only one who can do it. What we have here in Jesus, he's been with the Father. He's in the Father. The Father is in him. They have this unique relationship. He's uniquely been with them. He has come from there to here and knows how to get back and looks at you and says, you can't get there. Without assistance, there isn't anything that you can do to get there. I know this way. I've been this way. I'm heading back this way. And the only way you can get there is with a mediator. You need me to resolve this for you. You need me to pay a price for you. Now, there's a lot of different reflection that has happened over 2,000 years about what does it mean that Jesus mediates? What does it mean to pay a ransom? At a minimum today, I want you to understand this, that your sin and what you have done has caused a breach in your relationship with God. And it is not undone by a good thing. A good thing doesn't undo a bad thing. Two good things don't undo a bad thing. A breach. There's a conflict. And we talked about this a little bit last week in talking about the problem of evil. And a sin, an evil done against a holy and perfect God is a big deal. It is not simply shrugged off. A price needs to be paid. It costs us our life. We are separated from God in this life and the next. But we don't despair because even though God saw us in this situation, he said, I want him. I want him back. So he sent to us the only person who could make this better. He didn't send us another prophet. He didn't send us a guru. He didn't send someone who had some particular new sort of enlightenment about life. He sent the only one who could resolve this conflict for us. Because of who he is. Because he is the one that could live a perfect life. I can't die for you. I can't pay your price. I got to pay my own price. But he can live a life where he can pay someone else's price. But if he were just some dude and he lived a perfect life, he could die for one of us. But he's not just some dude. He's the Son of God. And so his sacrifice carries an infinite amount of weight. He can pay all of our ransoms. He can mediate this conflict for us. He's the only one who can. He is the only one who can pay for all of us. This is who Jesus is. And so in the same way that I believe that this was a revolutionary idea for the disciples, I want it to be the same for us. When you think about, I need to get right with God, when you think about, I need to find life in God, I don't want you to think about a code. I don't want you to think about a certain beliefs. I want you to think about Jesus Christ himself. Who he is and what he did. He died for you to mediate, to pay a ransom for you. And he was able to do that because of who he is. The path that we walk, the things that we talk about on a lot of Sundays, who it is that God has called us to be, the way that he wants us to live, that is our understanding of what God has called us to be after we found him. It is not the path that gets us there. It is the path that we walk with him now that we've been restored, now that it has been mediated because of what Jesus Christ did. And we will celebrate this even further next week in Easter when we talk about the significance of his death, the significance of his resurrection. But right now, we need to put our mind around that. And I know. I've had this conversation enough times in classrooms in Conway, Arkansas, in Bible studies, in lectures, in one-on-ones for countless years. You have a lot of questions. What about good people, sincere followers of other religions? What about people who never get to hear about Jesus? You have all these questions. And those are great questions. And Mark and I are going to record some podcasts this week that I hope you will find and listen to, where we will discuss and talk about those things. Those questions have answers. But before we get to kind of these different